Hey friends, before we get started with today's DKNG show, I just want to give you a little bit of a programming heads up. Adventures in Design will go back on break next week, and I'm going to admit that I do feel guilty about this. See, we were on break 2 weeks ago, we did 2 weeks of content, and now I'm going on break again. And I try to space out these breaks so that, you know, you guys get at least 3 or 4 weeks of content in a row, but it just so happened to be that 2 weeks ago was time to celebrate my anniversary with my wife, and as I was fully vaccinated, I hopped on a plane, surprised my dad, surprised my sister's family, and got to see my family for the first time in over 2 years. And just the way that the stars aligned, we have family coming in town next week. Well, I was going to try to jam out a bunch of episodes and just kind of make the week work, and then I decided, no, I don't want to do that. I'm having so much fun with the content this year. I don't want to cut corners. So I just wanted to let you know, yeah, it's a little close to take another week off, but it's just the way the stars aligned. And if I'm being selfish, I really fucking miss my family. And when they come out here, I want to be present. But also, I'm really, really enjoying the podcast. Last year was such a find yourself year. And this year, the way that the content is coming together, the people that I'm talking to, the way the interviews are working out, I just want to do my best work and don't want to be rushed. Don't worry, we're going to make it to 200 episodes this year. In fact, we're really, really close to hitting our first 100 episodes of the year, but I just want to give you a heads up and let you know what's going on. I haven't skipped town. I'm just being present, being with my family, and really enjoying the fact that since I got vaccinated, my life has literally gone from 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds. Here is this month's DKNG show. Thank you so much for giving me 2 minutes of your time to explain to you the programming. You probably don't even care, but I have such insane work guilt. I love my work so much that it just absolutely drives me insane, like all true passions do. It's DKNG on Adventures in Design. DKNG, welcome to the conveniently named DKNG show. How are you doing, boys?
Coincidence. I'm DK. And you're Nathan. You're Nathan. This is where you speak, Nathan.
Well, this is where you guys got really quiet for me, so sorry for the technical difficulties. I'm NG.
NG, yes. Up in Portland, question for you.
Yeah.
How is Oregon doing versus California during these wild times? Because, I mean, I'm looking around and my life is getting really, really close to looking like normal. And I'm curious, you left the Bay Area that has reached herd immunity, or what was it? Herd mentality. They're at herd mentality.
A little different.
Herd mentality. And you're now up in Oregon. Still feeling good about transplanting into a different state?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are definitely pros and cons to it. And I think, you know, leaving some of our friends and the familiarity of life behind during a pandemic and then being in a new place where we can't go out as much is tough. And we also moved in the winter and we're experiencing snow and things for the first time. So, but now Portland is beautiful. It's been like 80 degrees every day. It's really like come back to life. And yeah, I think we actually opened up indoor dining but before California did. So that was weird the first few times, just to see people, you know, we would be going outdoors somewhere, but seeing people sitting inside unmasked took some, it's still taking some time to get used to that. But sure. I think now that Megan and I are both fully vaccinated, it definitely is feeling a lot more normal. But they've kind of bounced back just like California a little bit too, of like, then they shut things down for a weekend, then opened up. So I think that part of it's really frustrating for restaurants and places, but so far it's been good. But I think the Bay Area was one of the most locked down places. Like, we ended up moving our wedding because of the fact that our venue in the Bay Area said, yeah, you can still get married here, but we just can't have any drinking, no cocktail hour, no dancing. And everyone must be masked the entire time. Like, all right, well, it doesn't really sound like a wedding anymore.
Yeah. Where are we getting married at? The Footloose Town? We're not allowed to do any of the fun things that make it a wedding?
Exactly.
No enjoyment.
Yeah, the seeing people eat indoors for the first time was bizarre. And I have to say, shout out to all the restaurateurs, because I can't even believe that they were able to make it an entire year of now you can have some people outside, now you can have some people indoors. Like, I'm not quite sure how they made it. I really don't understand how anybody makes money off of food, because, you know, the margins are high. You know, when you take a soda, right, and you think about what you sell Coke by the glass for versus what you pay for that big sack of plasma, right, that you pump the CO2 through. And by the way, when I was a younger, adventurous lad, and I got one of my first jobs, and they said, hey, you got to go fix the soda machine. I was like, what are you talking about? And it never dawned on me how corporate soda works, right? Like, I'd always been a buy the 2-liter guy, because back then I was white trash, and this is the sound of poverty. Psst, psst, you know, just like...
You thought it was like tubes going into jugs of like more soda in the back?
Yeah. Like, if you're sharing a 2-liter, times are hard, right? Times are hard. And a 20-ounce bottle, it looks like a Coke, but it doesn't taste like a Coke. There's something weird. The way to live your life, kids, is 12-ounce, 16-ounce, ice-cold cans from a cooler. That's how you're living your life. So anyways, mm-hmm. I had to go fix the soda machine. And I thought, man, I really, really love Coca-Cola. If Coca-Cola in a can tastes this good, how great would it taste straight from the goddess nectar? So
you got the nectar only.
So I mainline it, right? I get everybody all pumped up that I'm going to do this. Like, oh, he's going to mainline Coke. So I put like a straw through that plasma sack. And I fucking did like a full-on milkshake, like... to get it.
Yeah, I was going to say, how thick is it? Could you get it through there?
Brother, I can milkshake with the best of them. You know what I mean? Like, don't ever doubt how hard I suck. And so when I did it and it hit my mouth, it instantly felt like all of my teeth had been dipped in velvet. Like, everything in my mouth felt fuzzy and
weak. Instant diabetes.
And I have to say, that's when I learned the lesson, everything in moderation.
Yep.
But I agree with you. I have no idea. I mean, obviously, a lot of restaurants did not survive COVID, but the ones that do, because the margins are so tight, it's like how when these places say, like, yes, you can be open, but you'll be at 25% capacity, it's like, well, we were only making, you know, 5% being at maximum capacity every night. So, we have some friends that have a wine bar, and they're just like, what's the point? If we have to open and staff up, we're actually going to lose way more money than just being closed.
And I would love to know what kind of deals were worked out with commercial landlords, right? Because in my neighborhood, Dan's neighborhood, really Dan's neighborhood, around the corner from Dan's, and Dan lives rich adjacent. We'll just put it that way. Like, I'm beach adjacent.
If I go on a walk one block away, I feel rich. Then I come home.
Yeah. But they have that little gate where you have to show your tax return and they won't let you in, right? So.
Exactly.
But, you know, when you think about what the rent had to have been reduced, or are these restaurants, like, I just would love to know, does a landlord go, all right, I got these sorry sacks giving me $25,000 a month for this spot. Do I just understand they're at 25% capacity? They've been closed for 60 days. And I just go, hey, I own the building outright. We'll settle up when things get going. Or do they just go, no, fuck you. You signed a 5-year lease, 25 G's or else. And imagine, you know, I think all of us know that to run a successful business, you got to have, you know, 6 months kind of tucked away in the bank. But if you're a restaurateur and you're dropping 25 G's a month on your rent and not bringing anything in, how long can you go that rate? And then once you're back open, think about how far you got to go to get the coffers full again. So I would just love to know. And I know it's all, you know, landlord by landlord, agreement by agreement. And does the landlord own the building outright? Or they still have a bank loan on it? But I would just be fascinated to know, to like go through my neighborhood and be like, how much did you guys pay last year in rent? Because it would blow my mind to know how these deals were worked out.
Yeah, it's got to be like landlord by landlord.
Yeah, in the one case I know about, it sounds pretty horrific, like how the landlord treated them. And yeah, you're right. Like, we don't know if the landlord is still paying off their own mortgage and they're like, well, I can't, you know, be broke either. Right. But yeah, unfortunately, it sounds like some of these landlords have been pretty horrible with being like, yeah, the pandemic's not my problem. Keep paying me.
I mean, it is a business, but I don't know. I've thought a lot about something over the last 100-something days since we got a, you know, new leadership in America. Remember you and I were, or the three of us were talking about this, how the response to COVID was one of the worst designed problems ever, just the whole way that America handled this was a design, branding, marketing nightmare is the better way to say it. And I've thought a lot about, man, if the government just would have, right in the beginning, shipped every household 4-6 masks with like a little emblem on the bottom right, like a unity emblem, and it became a thing of pride to wear the mask, like, you know, like a post 9/11, people couldn't get that fucking magnet on the back of the car fast enough. You know what I mean? Like, never forget yellow ribbon, white and black ribbon, 9/11, make the buildings, building. Like, they couldn't brand it and market it fast enough, and it was America United. And I just kept thinking, man, if they, and we talked about this on the show, like the idea of how the U.S. could have taken this on as a marketing campaign instead of a choose your own adventure campaign. And I just feel like everything would have been so different if those masks would have showed up. And to my point, guys, have you noticed, Nathan, you're up in Oregon now, but Dan, have you noticed how many people you see wearing the free covered California face mask that covered California? No. Oh,
well, I haven't even noticed it.
Oh, well then going against my point here, but
okay,
covered California.
Also, don't leave the house. So
Debbie's not wearing one.
Okay, yeah. The one person I see, well, the two people I see. The first one, little baby, he's not really a believer of the mask thing.
Yeah,
so.
he's a little Trumper.
Little shit.
But
the ones they've been giving out for free here, I haven't been wearing it because I'm showing the guys. This is just a white cotton mask.
That's
that kind of has the same ribbing around the edges that like underwear does. Yes. So when you wear this thing, it really just looks like a pair of underwear on your face.
Yeah, it really looks like a pad almost.
Three colors that I didn't like for the face mask while we're doing face mask design critique. Anyways, Covered California, the insurance, they sent it out to their customers, 4 masks per household. Like a really ugly teal one and then a black and white one. And I cannot tell you how many of those I've seen everywhere. So it really got me thinking that the branding could have worked. But here you go. I'm going to give you the countdown on the top 3 worst mask colors of the pandemic and the reason why. Number 3. All right, everybody. Number 3 on our mask countdown. These are the 3 worst masks that you didn't want to wear during a pandemic. Number 3 is the blue disposable medical mask. I didn't like this mask because it made me feel like even though you were doing this to be a good neighbor and you were healthy, it makes you look like you're sick. It makes you look like you're in the hospital. And I just didn't like that vibe. Number 2. Number 2, a white mask is stupid looking. It looks like you have underwear on your face. It doesn't complement anyone's skin tone very well. If you're white, it makes you look more white and weird. And if you're black, it just is a crazy, you know, pattern that becomes in your face. So I don't like the white mask. It just looks too Puritan. It looks just weird. It looks religious. It looks occultish.
You could probably see through it too, like, you know,
not a fan.
You can see nipples through a white shirt. You know, you could have a like
that
something
I
going
am
on
a fan
with your
of.
Face you don't want people to see.
Distressed white tiche with black bra underneath. More. And number 1, the worst face mask you could wear during the pandemic. And I unsubscribed from a YouTube channel because the guy kept on wearing this was a flesh colored face mask. I do not need to see Ken's crotch where your face hole is. I do not need to see the Barbie crotch like on the bottom half of your face where you look like some sort of like you're dissolving and that you don't have a nose or mouth anymore. And then honorable mention, like Nathan said, any mask that had the colored piping around it. Because when mask design first became a thing, I said, oh, I really like how that's got like that piping around it. Like, you know, like a 70s, 80s pair of runner shorts or a tank
but
top.
Now it looks like you're wearing like children's underwear. It's like even worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It looks like you snuck into a child's room, stole their underoos, put them on your face, and then ran through the neighborhood like a fucking psycho pedophile bandit. There you go.
I think this list pretty much works for eye patches as well. Like a flesh colored eye patch is pretty freaky looking. Yeah.
Who are you fooling?
I can't think of his name, But there's that, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but there's that comedian that was a reoccurring character on, It's all falling apart. Larry David's show was called
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
There was a reoccurring character who is also a stand-up comedian. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I feel like there was a lot, but are you talking about Richard Lewis?
No, not Richard Lewis, not his lawyer. He has like a speech impediment. Anyways, he was a writer once for Saturday Night Live. I'm really going off the rails here. J.B. Smooth.
Okay.
He was a writer for Saturday Night Live, and he told Howard over on the Howard Stern show, he said, for whatever reason, they never really took any of my ideas. And Howard was like, well, throw me one of your ideas. He's like, a villain that wears two eye patches. The thought of a villain wearing two eye patches.
Yeah. I thought you were going to bring up It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and there's one of those McPoyle brothers that wears a flesh-colored eye patch that everyone's freaked out by. So then he draws an eyeball on it. It's even scarier looking.
Garm, 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 garmcompany.com. What are you going to do? You're going to go to garmcompany.com. You're going to buy some amazing brushes, maybe some textures, maybe some reference materials. And when you do, you're going to use the coupon code AID. And that means you're going to save site-wide, even when Amir, oh crazy Amir, when he puts on one of his insane sales, 50% off everything, 99% off everything, you're still going to get your AID discount. So if Amir goes 99% off everything, and then you save on everything you buy using coupon code AID, you're going to get some amazing resource materials for your design to be better and easier and more efficient, and you'll probably make money back on the deal because Amir's crazy, and Garm, 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 company.com. You only have to put Garm in there once. I'm just trying to do what we call branding, brand recognition. Garmcompany.com, coupon code AID, site-wide. Go there right now. You can thank me later. All right. I look like shit today, so I'm going to do an unboxing.
It's a good thing we're doing a podcast.
I have this cube box. Well, you design it. You tell people what you're seeing.
Can you hold up? We can't even see.
Yeah, hold the box up first. Okay. There we go.
We have a cube.
It's about an eight-inch cube.
Yeah.
Or 6-inch cube.
It's got that industrial tape you need a knife for.
Yeah, where your address is, your shipping label is what's keeping it shut. All right.
Mm-hmm. He's opening the box. Looks like 2-ply cardboard. Ooh, that is heavy-duty box for something that does not need heavy-duty protection.
All right, we're seeing hats inside.
Hat. Okay.
It is a buffalo hat.
I gotta take my headphones off to put the hat on.
The lid is cobalt blue. We've got kind of a dark gray front, and the logo, it's a little pixelated on my end, but it's like says Buffalo Bills. Yep. Oh, it's got like that really hardcore like embossment of the, what do you call that thing?
It's got that marrowed edge or something.
Yeah.
It's basically like the patch embroidered onto the hat.
But it's like super thick, so it's like really comes out.
Here's the sign.
And Dan, looking. Buffalo Bills, is that soccer or a cricket team?
Oh, I thought it was the guy that murdered people from that movie.
This is part of that Mondo Silence of the Lambs limited edition hat set.
Yes. I didn't know we had a logo. That's awesome.
All right. For people that love hats, here's the sound of that new era sticker coming off your bill.
Ooh. It puts the hat on the head.
So Nathan, you'll understand this. I just pulled off my 5950 new era sticker. Size 7.58. Nathan, you'll understand this. When you love a sports organization that's not the Oakland Raiders, who has the best color scheme ever, black and silver, always looks great, it's kind of hard to find good merchandise. So I was cleaning out my inbox, and I saw that NFL had dropped these draft hats. And I'm like, oh, man, the chance to get a Buffalo Bills hat that is mesh in the back, has a nice black front to it, even though it looks a little gray here under the bright filming lights. Wow. It has a trucker type patch on it. It just says Buffalo Bills. They don't get too crazy. It's more tight base, but they use the buffalo as an accent. It has the team's colorway as the bill of the hat. So, you know, the blue won't look too bad wearing all black. But man, oh man, Dan, I cannot explain to you how hard it is to find sports memorabilia that you would actually want to wear if you care about your appearance.
Uh-huh.
It's hard. That's the popularity of Violent Gentlemen, is that those guys took an outsider sport, they designed the sport in a way where it looks like punk rock band t-shirts. So yep. Therefore, you can still look punk. You can still look like, you know, you're yourself or whoever you are, you know, former skateboarder or, you know, future Orange County billionaire. If we're going to run the gamut, who wears their products?
Your normal set of friends.
Just my normal crew of guys I hang out with. And you can wear it and still be you. Like, you don't have to look like you're wearing. Because, Nathan, what's your opinion on this? What do you think about grown men that wear other men's jerseys? Like, go to a sporting event and I'm wearing his shirt. His name's on my shirt. I'm wearing his shirt. I don't like
it. Yeah. I guess I haven't thought about it in that way, but there is something that feels like, oh yeah, seeing, you know, Tony Romo's wife wearing his jersey or sometimes
sexy.
Like in college, there would have like, she's dating the quarterback of one team, but her brother's on the other team. So she's wearing a jersey split in half.
Right.
yeah.
But if I'm like a fat mess and I'm wearing an Aaron Donald jersey and it's like tight on me and he looks like a Greek goddess out on the field, it's like, I'm wearing his shirt. Like, I don't know. It's
something
a little
about
weird.
A very big, like out of shape man wearing an athletic jersey just kind of blows my mind every time. But
well, and I think those like the authentic jerseys are so expensive. I feel like more often than not, you're seeing the shitty knockoff and the color's not quite right. And the
patches
are not quite right. This was like my struggle with going to USC.
Maroon and gold.
Well,
right?
It's cart. If you want to get specific, I mean, this is Venture in Design. It's Pantone 201
blood.
Is the cardinal color. And I had also like was trying to get into UCLA, and I was like, man, I'd much rather wear blue than red just day to day, and especially with USC because then working there, that cardinal color is so specific. A lot of vendors don't make it, so like some stuff would be maroon and some stuff would be red, and some things are in the middle. It just was.
Yeah,
really hard to get consistent. Where, yeah, like you're saying, like Raiders black.
Oh,
it's just so easy to find that anywhere.
Can't fuck that up.
Well, and here's the problem too. You know, I support the Rams. I grew up watching the Bills. That was the first organization that I was with. But they both picked this shade of blue is just not very becoming. You know what I mean? Like they don't go for like a deep navy blue. But I mean, there is something. I will say this. I do understand why sports memorabilia sells, because when you go to the game and you're sitting in the arena or you're sitting, you know, in the stadium, it looks so good out on that field. Like the colors, the contrast, and like, you know, the Anaheim Ducks, the way that they use that orange to go against the black and gold. And so I do see why people get sucked into buying the merch, because it looks so good out on the field. But does it look good Tuesday in your fucking marketing meeting? I don't think so.
I feel like sports logos, subtlety isn't the game. It's about competition and making sure that your logo has enough contrast and enough vibrancy next to the other one that it looks like your eye chooses to look at that one. That's why all these logos have like 8 sets of outlines around them, because they're just like, please look.
And I think there's a reason why if you go to a nightclub in Las Vegas, well, there's a few reasons, but they say, you know, no jerseys, no like basketball shorts. These fit in perfectly well at a game, but maybe not. Yeah. In your day-to-day life.
Do you guys remember the story on Hammer Time where Biggie announced that he had enough juice to get into a Las Vegas nightclub wearing sweatpants? And they're like, you can't come in here with sweatpants on. And he was with a made man that like vouched for him. And the guy goes, hey man, not for nothing, but they kicked like, you know, some rapper out last week for, you know what I mean? I don't know who was there, but like, you know, Little Yachty had to leave last week because he was wearing sweatpants.
little sweaty.
little sweat. All right. So I got a question for you guys. It's a hypothetical. Okay. A client comes to you. Tesla comes to you and says, we want you to do some design work for us, but we're going to give you an option on your payments because we're a fucking crazy company.
Dogecoin or...
You know exactly where this is going.
Okay, okay.
So would you guys rather have $25,000 up front given to you in two payments, $12,000 deposit to get started, then a $12,000 second payment, 1,000 days after the work is done. You know, just the standard design freelance protocol. So $25,000 guaranteed or one Bitcoin.
One Bitcoin?
One
Bitcoin. Let me look up the current. It's about $44,000.
Like last I looked, it was like $47,000
or something. Yeah,
it was $50,000 last week. $47,000, $46,000 today.
$43,000 right now. It's kind of taking a bit of a dip. It's dropping right now.
Yeah. This is really a timing issue. If it's on its way up, it would be...
Well, here's the catch. You get the Bitcoin when service is rendered.
Yeah. It's so volatile. Like, I mean, we could just end up with the $25,000 in the end anyway.
But you could end up with less too. So yeah, I think that I would be excited to, because I am a gambling man, I would want to roll the dice on this and go for it.
You're going Bitcoin?
Yeah. Maybe that window of when services are rendered, we could kind of fluctuate, be like we're ready to hand over the files, but it's not looking good today. Let's check back tomorrow.
Just a couple more tweaks.
Oh my God, what a game of chicken. You don't want to, we're going to upload the file. Oh, it's the weekend. Sorry, guys. We'll try again on Monday.
I just heard a story about a guy who is a Dogecoin millionaire. And he, you know, it's like the whole Reddit diamond hands thing. Like, he's not selling. I think I would be scared in that position. But it's like, what do you do? Yeah. If you had sold your Amazon stock early on, you wouldn't have done nearly as well if you held out till now.
So I'm buying, the day that this episode comes out, I have a 1,000 Doge. And I'm just going to let it just sit. And if it doubles... I'm just going to let it sit. I'm like literally buying it as a long con, and yeah.
You're buying the dips.
I will only cash out my 1,000 Doge if it's like, oh my God, that's life changing money. It's time to pull it out of the market. But I'm just going to go 1,000, let it just sit in the background and percolate. And, you know, hopefully if I bought it today, let me see, where are we at today? As of live of recording. Currently right now it'd be $474 to just have a 1,000 lurking in the background somewhere. But just imagine if that 1,000 went the way of the Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin right now is 42,000 per coin. Could you imagine what a fuck? I mean, granted, I would have cashed out way before it got to that number because I'd be looking for life-changing money. And life-changing money would have been way before $42,000 a coin. But I remember my friend, who's a fucking maniac, who one day I went over to his house. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm mining Bitcoins. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I bought these PCs and blah, 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 blah. And it's making my power go up. But I talked to him and I think he actually mined like he created, you know, didn't put any money in other than buying a PC and letting the electric run all the time. But I think he mined in like 3.5 coins. And I looked at it the other day and I'm like, hey, Beth, that crazy ship that Garlet was up to, that was about a $200,000 investment of him fucking around with those PCs in his apartment.
Wow. I remember that, like, I don't know how many years ago that was now that was all starting. And I think I was watching one of those like HGTV House Hunters show where someone was like, oh, yeah, like my husband, he needs a room to do his Bitcoin mining. And it was like, what are they talking about?
It's so wild. It's like it hurts my brain to think about that. You're taking something that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. You're making it materialize. And as it materializes, there is an instant agreed upon value on that item. Like, it hurts my brain, man. I'm too dumb for this shit.
Understand it. Yeah.
And it's not even like a physical thing. It's like data in the blockchain, right? So that's why it was hard for me to wrap my head around the environmental impact. And like, speaking of Tesla, how they were like, we're investing in Bitcoin. You can now buy a Tesla with Bitcoin. Yeah. But then they were like, never mind. This is ruining the environment. And that's
I thought that was so confusing. When I read that, I was like, I thought that it's like everything's digital. Like, how's this hurting the environment? But I guess it's using power to to mine? Is that what's going
on?
Yeah,
it's all the energy. It's the same reason we haven't released an NFT yet. It's just too bad for the environment.
Well, that's the thing that fucked me up about the NFTs when people are like, yeah, but I don't like the damage it's doing to the environment. And I like kind of laugh to myself. I'm like, what? Like when Edmondson's over there painting old-fashioned eyes, he's taking tree materials. Well, first I got to have the canvas. Then I got to use some water to get my brush wet. Then I got to use the graphite and the pencils and the wood around the pencils. Then, you know, Mark, I sell my pencils and then I paint it. So I can sell, Mark, I can sell my sketch. I can sell my pencils. I can sell my painting. And then I, you know, I sell the duplicates when I go out to the shows. You know what I mean? A lot of people like to buy the jiggles and I sell those when I go out to the show. So I'm really selling the same thing like 4 or 5 times. I'd like to sell the Instagram post. If I could sell the Instagram post, I'd sell the Instagram post. So yeah, it's weird to think that this stuff, like if a Bitcoin costs power, right? Like that's the environmental damage. But what about paper money? You know, let's say that I go and buy a Tesla. Yeah.
It's probably costs energy to make that too.
But let me give it to you this way, Dan. I go and buy a Tesla Plaid, which is the S, like fully souped up. I think I built one for fun over the weekend. It was like $160,000. So I go.
Is that a Spaceballs joke? The Plaid thing?
Yeah.
What a company. What a fucking dumb company. First off, the first 4 cars spell out the word sexy, and now they're putting Spaceballs jokes in their cars. All right. But if I bought one, let's say I go and buy my Plaid, $160,000 vehicle, and just for those of you that are counting at home, the Y is way less than that. But I go and buy a Plaid, right? And I pay for it in individual dollar bills. I give them 160,000 singles. What's more environmental impact? 3 bitcoins, 4 bitcoins, or my pile of old fashioned money?
Yeah, imagine that scene from Breaking Bad when Walter White and his wife are looking at that crate full of cash.
The cube of cash.
Yeah, the cube of cash. That's what it'll look like.
Well, I have a question because just like I could go out and get an electric car now or a gas-powered car and one of them has less environmental impact than the other, which I think is still up in the air, right? Because at some point these Tesla batteries are just going to like degrade into the soil. But what if there's a way to get a Bitcoin that was responsibly mined? So like, let's say I put solar panels on my house and I'm mining Bitcoins just from solar power. Could I then sell that as like, this is a responsible Bitcoin versus factory farm Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I'd be more prone to invest in something like that. That's like, I think that's where this is all going.
It is just so wild that we're getting ready to enter space times, right? Like in our lifetime, we saw factory times. We're getting ready to go into space times. And if the world goes this way, this is how I see the world. There was dinosaur times, which for man was cave times. Then we went to castle times. Then we went to cowboy times. Then we went to factory times. We're getting ready to go into spaceship times. Like we're literally like currency that we can't touch. People buying outfits for characters that aren't real through video games, like cars that you plug into the fucking wall that can drive themselves. Like we are going hardcore. We're not balls deep, but we're getting ready to hit spaceship times. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Or I think space times could also be like virtual times. Like we're already doing so much, you know, not in the real world and this like Ready Player One kind of existence. And I was even thinking like going to the grocery store yesterday, doing the self checkout and there's like a computer talking to me. And you can kind of like live your whole life now, even, you know, not including COVID, you can live your whole life kind of not talking to a human.
Sure.
It's getting pretty weird.
It's my goal. It's my life goal.
I used to be mad when I went to the grocery store where I'm like, oh, so now I'm the cashier? Like, I got to do their work?
Yeah. And then, like,
do you want me to, like, restock some things while I'm here?
What if before you check out, it's like, would you like to tip 10%, 20%, or $100?
Hey, I'm sure we're going to rant about this tomorrow on Hammer Time, but Gus's birthday was last Friday. And Hammer.
Oh, happy birthday, guys.
Hammer.
If you're listening. No one's listening.
See? So we went to Palm Springs. Beth and I were in Palm Springs for our anniversary. Hammer, Gus, and our friend Nick Bayside, they were in Palm Springs, so we had lunch. So when we got the we got the bill. I threw down enough cash to cover me, Beth, and Tavo to pay for Tavo's birthday lunch. And then Hammer's like, oh, I'll take care of the rest. And so he picked up the receipt and he looked at it and he goes, oh, wowee wee wow. 3% COVID tax on her bill.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was for the restaurant to pass over to us, the consumer, all the PPE protocols that they're doing for COVID. Meanwhile, this didn't feel like a very COVID-friendly restaurant. First off, it's Palm Springs. So there's like a water, like mist system that's just blowing particles all around mm-hmm. us. So you're like, oh, one person coughs and it can surf these little micro bubbles. We're all getting it. So mm-hmm. a little 3% COVID tax added to the bill.
I'd rather them just not say it. Like, if they're going to be using the money that we spend, just give it to your employees and don't talk about it. It's like, oh, did you know the flour costs 25 cents? That's what we're putting it down for. And like, they're like telling you all these details that aren't really necessary. It just kind of like makes them look bad.
They don't give a fuck. Restaurants. Now we're going to go. We start out this conversation feeling bad for restaurants. Now we're like, fuck them. I hope they all go out of business.
Well, so one kind of like culture shock thing of moving from the Bay Area to Portland is that in San Francisco, there was already like a pretty expensive health mandate tax on any restaurant receipt. So it was like, okay, this is the price of the food. But then once the bill comes, once you have tax, SF Health, all these things, it's like, okay, this was the conversation constantly happening of like, wait, why do we have to pay for your employees' health insurance?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And then coming to Oregon where there's no sales tax, and it's like, wait, my $6 beer is actually $6 and my beer is $6, not $12. What's happening here?
Yeah.
That was strange. But I agree, because it's like, okay, if you know DKNG or any of our businesses, we build in our expenses into the prices that we charge clients. Exactly. And I'm not saying like, here's an overage for our monthly internet expense or whatever. It's like
French papers at a surcharge. So,
I kind of want restaurant. I mean, maybe that would turn people away if they're like, oh shit, the entrees are $45 now. Never mind.
But I mean, I just
it does feel like a bait and switch when they add everything on at the end.
I just look at the restaurant and I go, okay, it's $16 for a grilled cheese, $18 for a grilled cheese here in San Francisco. And I just go, wow, this is a really expensive part of the country. And I understand why it's $18, because their rent's probably through the roof. And, you know, they can't pay their servers $4 in tips. They got to give them, you know, $12 in tips or whatever, so they can actually have quality people come in and work. But when the grilled cheese goes down from, you know, $18 to $12, but my bill has added to it
all that $6 bullshit.
We do this for our customer, our employees' health insurance. I go, fuck you, man. Run your business properly. Why are you putting it on my shoulders? Like, why am I the guy that has to just go down the street like Johnny Appleseed of cash and be like, oh, you just worked the counter at the frozen yogurt place. Here's a tip for you. And dude, I'm done. Pre-tipping before services, I'm done. No longer. When it's like, you know, a coffee shop and it's like, you pay for it on the iPad, like, what would you want to tip us? I'm like, we'll see when the service is done.
Let's see how you do. I mean, the whole tax thing, I know that it's so common just to see at the end of the bill, but like, even when we do like retail events in California, for example, we just kind of build that into our pricing anyway too. And the customer's like, what's the tax? I'm like, don't worry about it. Like, we're going to pay our tax bill later. But what you're paying is what you're paying, and we'll worry about the taxes after the fact.
Yeah, I always tell everybody at the shows, I'm like, oh, are there taxes? I go, no, I work that out on the back end, because literally I can't stand here all day long on cash transactions and credit card transactions. Yeah. And then
you owe me another $1.23, and you have like that little like belt thing with like the nickels and shit.
that's not working at an arcade.
I'm from the age where I can remember the ice cream man that didn't have a shirt on, that had a real scraggly beard, bleached out Vince Neil from Motley Crue, like white hair, mirrored sunglasses on, and he used to fucking drive the ice cream truck down the street with a boombox on the dashboard, and he'd have his left hand on the steering wheel, right hand on that little bell that he would ring, and that bell would be on rhythm with like Van Halen or like Motley Crue or whatever. And then when he would come over, you know, because he got to get out of the seat, and then he goes in between the driver's seat, passenger seat, walks down that little aisle, backside of the van is the cooler, other side of the van is the cutout window. It was like, hey, what do you kids want? And he just had on fucking jean shorts so short that the fucking pockets hanging out of the bottom. Mm-hmm. And he had that coin. Mm-hmm. He had that coin thing. No shirt. What he was wearing for a short was a coin belt. And I thought that guy was like the coolest motherfucker in the world. Just driving down the road. Running with the devil. Cling, cling, cling,
cling. Like so I would good. Fit right in Venice Beach. Oh,
dude, Venice Beach is a human crisis right now. Are you aware of this?
Oh, how so? No. What's going on?
So,
I mean, it's always kind of been a human crisis.
So over the last year, homelessness, or there's now a PC term for it, home insufficient or some shit. But we'll call them homeless because I'm rough around the edges.
What,
okay. Do you know the How term? Dare
you? You just got canceled.
I'm fucking, who cares? You have to be started before you can get canceled.
Home deficient? I don't know.
Home deficient? Well, yeah. Nathan's home efficient, and you and I are home. We're home
efficient.
We're home borrowers.
Yes.
But anyways, a lot of homeless folks migrated down to the famous Venice Beach boardwalk, and mm-hmm. it has become a full-on colony, and it's out of control. They go down there, they run them out, it rebuilds itself, and now all of the restaurants that were opening up on that strip, they're afraid to reopen because it's just become melee down there. I mean, you're talking about, if you go off of the Venice Beach boardwalk and you go over one block, you're looking at $6, $8, $10, $12 million homes, and these people are like, we can't even go in our yards anymore because there's just people taking a shit in our yard or banging on our windows. Like, it's like become Skid Row beach adjacent, which I say, if you are going to be home deficient, why not go for beachfront property? Why the fuck would you live in Skid Row? I would just keep walking till I hit the ocean, be like, I live here now.
Yeah. I mean, from the homeless point of view, the home deficient point of view, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to go towards the ocean.
Yeah. But it's.
But that's like also where people go when they're like, I have money. You should buy a house.
Yeah. I always make this like argument to Megan when we're driving around Portland and there's like, you know, homeless tents everywhere. Like every freeway on ramp, off ramp seems to have it. And I'm like, why don't these people just move to Santa Monica? Like those homeless people are enjoying wonderful weather. But it's like, if you are homeless, then maybe you don't have the wherewithal to be planning cross country moves and things like
that. I think when we think homeless, there's a category of people where COVID was really bad and they couldn't pay their rent and they had to go live with like their mom, or maybe they didn't have anybody and the family ends up in a shelter. And I feel like I'm not downgrading that experience because it's got to be fucking horrible, but like the single mom with like two kids that doesn't have any family, you know, maybe she's a first generation immigrant, she doesn't have that network, and they end up in a shelter. Like, I feel like that story, there are the resources to get that family back on their feet again. Like, I feel like that is such a small part when we're talking about homeless, in particular here in Southern California. We're talking about mental illness. We're talking about people that just aren't able to be saved because they can't save themselves. So that just by default becomes, you know, where they go and who they become. But imagine this for a second. Pandemic has passed. You somehow, you're like the third out actor in like a sitcom over on Fox, right? And you buy your dream home in Venice Beach. Like, I made it. I broke the odds. I went to Hollywood. I'm on a reoccurring TV show. My agent, my manager, my financial wealth guy says there's enough money for me to buy this beautiful $8 million home, two blocks from the beach in Venice. Like, what a dream thing. And then you're like, but I also share this home with a guy shitting in a boot that will not leave where I should be parking my $150,000 car. Now, I know some people at home are like, well, poor rich person. But this has become a bit of a crisis just because, and this happened in Orange County as well. There's a creek that ran behind where the Honda Center is in Anaheim. And there was like one or two people out there, three or four. And the next thing you know, it became
a commune.
A commune. And what I don't think a lot of people think about is a lot of people are like, oh, wealthy people or middle class people, they just want that out of there because they don't like the way that it looks. But you have to think about what a health hazard that is to have that many people living on top of each other without running water, without any of the amenities that keep us sterile and clean. And then also you add in that some of these people aren't capable of processing good decisions. It's like that is something that could just spread like crazy disease or sickness. So I understand it from a crisis point of view, but I don't know what LA is going to do. I don't know where these people go. And I don't think anybody has an answer. So they've started building those tiny home colonies. Have you seen those, Dan?
I know what you're talking about, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah. They're actually like putting some of these people in basically like Home Depot sheds and just like, well, we're going to give you some place to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a solution. I mean, and like homeless shelters. I mean, there's like so many different steps here. It's like you could do problem solving like based off the fact that it's after the fact, which is like, where do you put them? But then there's all this preventative stuff that, you know, no one's really talking about. Like mental health issues is really an issue. Like what if we had services that avoided, you know, this in the future and like actually help people and they would, you know, potentially not become homeless. But I don't know.
Once again, though, it becomes about branding and marketing, yep. Right? Like, so this is a crisis we have on our hands. And it just seems like the money always goes to creating a Band-Aid, but never actually stopping what the problem is. And so as we're kind of having an impromptu episode where we're looking back on the last year, the only thing marketed worse than the COVID response from the federal government was the other side's response to police violence with defund the police. Like the worst branding in the history.
Wrong terms to choose.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I talked about this with my dad and my dad didn't realize this. My dad is in favor of rerouting the funds for the police so they don't
which
have to go.
Which is basically the same thing.
Which is what it is, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because my dad's like,
defund sounds like you're taking money away.
It sounds like
appropriating it.
Yeah, you're shutting down the police department. What are we going to do about the criminals? They're going to run free.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It sounds like those commercials that the right wing conservatives made, where it's like, a woman's like, "Help, 911! Somebody broke into my house. We will be with you in 2 hours." Like they made these white fear commercials, but that's what it sounds like. But when you actually think about taking the homeless off of the police hands. Mm-hmm. Creating a different section of
nonviolent,
a social worker type thing.
Like, yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. Where, they go down there and try to figure out who can be saved and create resources. But instead, what we do is we turn a blind eye to it. We let this human pot boil over. And then when there's something bad that's happened, 2 cops show up, that escalates everything. 2 more cops show up, that escalates everything. And the next thing you know, you have this big mad dash, something's breaking out, somebody on a balcony pulls up an iPhone. They have no idea how it got to that moment. And then we just do it all over again and call it Tuesday. So it is so interesting when we look at a lot of problems in the world. And I'm going to take this back to Donald Trump. It is all about good branding and marketing. And I remember when The Apprentice was in its first and second season, Beth and I watched it. And I looked over at Beth. At the time, Beth and I are full-time graphic designers. We're in the middle of our poster run. I look over at Beth and I go, The Apprentice could so easily be crushed and destroyed if a designer got in there. Because these are all middle management types that are trying to, they're in The Apprentice. They're the type of people that hop from position to position to try to get to that VP, CFO, all that type of, corporate jockeying. But their only metric in life is writing an email, replying to an email, booking a meeting, and going to a meeting. Whereas the designer would go in there and go, okay, today's challenge is about selling more Whoppers than the other guys. This is a boots on the ground marketing mission. And these people, the people that actually would apply for that show, they only knew how to delegate. But when it came to their boots being on the ground, they had no idea to do. Designers, we are the ones that have
executors
and problem solvers. And I'm always so surprised that things like COVID, things like homelessness, like these crises, they really do need not a group of designers like, we all donated a poster and 15% of every poster is going to go to these people. These people, these thought leaders, which we are a part of that tribe, these thought leaders, they need to donate that, their brain power, their like mental equity on how to solve these things. That would actually be way, way more beneficial than donating a design or selling something, giving proceeds. Like, we need to be at the top, at the table when this stuff's talked about. And too bad I'm busy on that day.
I've really been enjoying the daily New York Times briefing, and they have been so critical to the CDC and like their messaging and rollout and their design of all this. And it's been kind of funny because the New York Times is like very snarky about it and just like, well, clearly they were getting tired of being on the wrong side of science. So I'm glad they're finally like waking up. But they have done some shit that is causing problems. Like most recently, they were talking about how, you know, the science has said that there have been like barely any outdoor transmissions. Like if you walk past someone on the street, you're both unmasked. That hasn't happened at all. Yet how the CDC frames it, because they're so cautious, is saying less than 10% of COVID infections happen outdoors. And New York Times is basically saying, okay, so let's put that in a different context. Let's say less than 20,000 people are attacked by sharks each year.
Yeah.
That's a totally accurate statement because only 150 people get attacked by sharks each year. So, but it's like, why would you say that? Yeah. It makes it sound like it's way more prevalent. So, I've been appreciating them trying to like design the problem in a more accurate way rather than just being like, let's err on the side of caution. If it fucks everything up, so be it. At least we didn't accidentally give too small.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like protecting themselves from saying too much, and then all of a sudden someone breaks that rule. I think, Mark, you mentioned this in an earlier podcast, but like telling people that they have to wear masks outdoors also helps prevent indoor wearing.
Yeah.
Because they're just kind of like, they're on their way into something and they're like, oh, now this is when I have to transition. But if they never have to think about it, then it's more likely they're going to be safe. And it's not about prevention of like outdoor transmission. It's about prevention of transmission in general.
Well, with the CDC, I know one of those C's stands for clowns, but I'm not really sure which one it is because they are a fucking bunch of knuckleheads. And that, you know, how many times in the last year would they say something and retract it or like, oh, we accidentally posted that? I mean, come on. Your burden of responsibility is so much more rather than I put up a photo on Instagram and Mort's like, dude, take that photo down. I didn't want you to put that photo. I mean, you know what I mean? Like that is, they have such more responsibility than knuckleheads like us. But I think that the CDC in many ways, they have been such a big part of the problem because of branding. They've lost all integrity as far as I'm concerned because last week they said, you know, now you don't have to wear a mask outdoors. But don't you feel like it should be a campaign as in, like right now the state of California is saying, if everything goes the way that it is supposed to go, June 15th, the state is unlocked. Okay? So you feel like that there's a date. Everybody's being really good trying to earn it. And then if on June 15th there's a big press conference and Gavin Newsom says, we did it, guys. We were the strictest. We did this. We did that. But it all paid off. And now this is where we're at. You take that news serious because you work toward it. Not just like this pop flash sale of, by the way, I don't know if you heard, mask no longer required. And it's also Friday at 4:00. Fuck you, America. Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to today's DKNG show over on Adventures in Design. We've put together a lot of these episodes here lately. We've just kind of doing a different format where we hang out and talk a little bit loose. And that's mainly because DKNG have so much work that they're working on right now that they can't talk about. And because the show's format used to be, we would take 10 of their projects, break them down, give you guys all the sort of the behind the scenes on how they do the voodoo that they do. It's been a refreshing break just getting to hang out because we are all three really good friends in the real world and we just haven't had that opportunity because, oh, you know, global pandemic. So I hope you're enjoying the show. I hope you're enjoying the loose format of it. Don't worry. We're going to get back to breaking down some big design projects. But I think a lot of just the friendly banter is here to stay because we've never had more fun making the show, and we hope you feel the same way. Coming up in part two for Circle of Trust members, we have an extended version of the DKNG show with over an hour more of content. We're going to break down some projects. We're going to look at a lot of different things that are coming up in the guy's career, talk about how the music industry is shaking out, and also I get a little bit into what's been going on my end. And then at the very end, for members of the Circle of Trust, we have a big announcement. There's something new that I'm going to start doing for Circle of Trust members, and always love to start with the people that got me to where I'm at. And DKNG has been such loyal friends, such great supporters of Adventures in Design, and really two of the people that have helped me build this just about as much as anyone. Definitely in the top 10 of people that helped put all of this together. So we're going to start a little something fun that we'll talk about at the end of today's episode. To hear part two, make sure you head over to AID.network, become a member of the Circle of Trust, where we have over 1,300 plus episodes and workshops waiting for you to explore, and many, many of those episodes featuring DKNG or Nathan or Dan solo, and sometimes paired up with some of the wild bunch that we keep company with. Part two and a big announcement starts right now over at AID.network, only for members of the Circle of Trust. And then it gets interesting. And so I'm forgiving me for bringing up Disney World, but it bears to the conversation. So Friday, Thursday, CDC said, you know, you don't have to wear a mask outdoors. So Disney stock fell at a 2-year low on Thursday. So president of the company or CEO of the company, Bob Chapek, to try to change the narrative, he's like, oh, by the way, starting tomorrow, like literally didn't even give it 24 hours. Starting tomorrow at Walt Disney World's parks in Florida, you don't have to wear a mask outdoors, which I think was a very short-sighted gift to their guests, to their customers, because I can go to the park and I don't have to wear a mask as I'm walking down Main Street. But as soon as I go over to an attraction or go into a shop, I have to put a mask on. So yeah. That means that there's a poor cast member that now has to stand at the edge of all these things and go up to people that are pissed off, that are angry, maybe politically don't identify with the mask. And you have to go up to a guy that has the Blue Lives Matter sticker on the back of his Toyota Tundra and a fucking big American flag hanging off the back of it. You have to tell that guy who's already pissed off that his fucking wife talked to him.
It's an F-150. We don't like those Japanese trucks.
I ain't driving no rice burner. But you have to tell that guy, sir, you have to pull your mask up or you have to put your mask on. Let's all wear them until none of us have to wear them. That is the vibe that I think that they should go for. But this piecemeal response, it just makes you realize nobody knows what's going on. Nobody's in control. It kind
of feels like it's a mind trick to convince the unvaccinated to get vaccinated, where it's like
the Ohio lottery?
The benefit. Yeah, kind of like, hey, there's a benefit to this. Look at all the people that don't have to wear masks now.
Oh, yeah, that's totally what it is. It's like, if you eat your vegetables, you get to have dessert. Like, yes, if you get vaccinated, we will let you take your mask off. Look at everyone else. They're having fun. Don't you want to have fun?
Well, so they're kind of like, you know, piecemealing the fun out there and kind of making people feel FOMO.
But that would be based on, and I agree with you both, but that would be based on if we were actually checking vaccinations. And
I know, right?
Let's get into the ultimate design quandary of the last year. The vaccination card.
The fucking card.
Who came up with that arbitrary size?
I think John Oliver had a joke about it, how it doesn't fit any standard wallet size.
Nope. Yeah, nope. It's like it's too big to fit in a wallet, but too small to... Yeah, it's like, what a weird...
And it's just like, there's nothing about it that can't be falsified.
I love how you both had your cards just readily available. Like I said it and you guys just magically each just pulled one up.
Because I think I just left it sitting on it's been like in my little nook of my iMac is where I keep like a few essential things for anyone looking to break into my house.
Know where I keep my essential things. That's like when I went to Sean's house in the Snicket for the first time and last time. When we got to his house. We got to his house He had obviously been packing in a fury to go to France where we met up, and he had his fucking safe sitting on his dining room table facing the window that had no blinds on it. And he came in and he's like, he saw his little safe sitting on the table facing the window and he goes, absolutely nailed it.
Did it have like the door of it slightly ajar with just like one like gold brick like dangling out?
Oh, what do you think? What do you think Sean Moore keeps in his safe?
I don't know. Probably some Star Wars.
Probably related. Candy. I'm thinking candy. Like Swedish fish, probably.